heel even vanuit mijn kant nogmaals welkom hier. Welkom, wat fijn dat jullie hier zijn, ondanks het feit dat Satish hier niet kan zijn. Wij organiseren dit vanuit Club Groeneveld. Het is een club mensen die met elkaar eigenlijk bezig is om op zoek te gaan naar op welke manier we nou betekenisvol kunnen leven en werken in een tijd die weinig houvast meer geeft. In een tijd die gebaseerd lijkt op een oneindigheid van groei die nou in elk geval in de natuur niet terug te zien is. Misschien is het wel tijd voor een nieuwe manier van leven. Misschien is het wel tijd van een nieuwe manier van samen zijn. Een nieuwe manier van spreken. Een nieuwe manier van zijn. En als er één iemand daar een voorbeeld van is, dan is het Satish Kumar. Een man die met Gandhi als voorbeeld eigenlijk altijd heeft gedaan wat hij voelt. En zegt, ja, daarover praten is het doen. Hij heeft, wat ik al kort benoemde, misschien weet niet iedereen dat, maar hij heeft in de jaren 60 heeft hij een anti-proliferatie tegen kernwapens, een vredeswandeling gelopen van New Delhi, van het graf van Gandhi, wilde die helemaal naar Washington lopen om daar Kennedy iets aan te bieden, de vraag voor vrede. Tijdens zijn wandeling wordt Kennedy vermoord, dus hij eindigt en begint bij een graf, begint bij Gandhi, eindigt bij Kennedy, maar tussendoor gaat hij langs alle hoofdsteden door Europa, door alle landen die bezig zijn met het creëren van kernwapens. Precies datgene wat je misschien niet moet doen in het leven is wapens bouwen, maar juist bruggen bouwen om met elkaar samen te komen tot een nieuwe realiteit dat echt mogelijk is. En als één iemand dat heeft laten zien, dan is het Satish. Dus hartelijk welkom, fijn dat jullie hier toch zijn, offline en online, om met elkaar te delen. Then I will continue in English from now on. Satish, I will introduce you a little bit, but I will ask you to do it yourself because obviously you know a bit more about yourself than I do. But very welcome, and we're so completely honored. Let me just stand right here, that's easier. We're absolutely honored that you could be here with us today, even if it's online. I've just said a little bit about your life, a little bit of what you've done. But obviously it's too much to say in 2 hours and 4 hours and 6 hours. It's a life worth sharing and it's deeds worth sharing. So very welcome, very very honored that you could be here. And I'm very gladly and happily will give you now the time to introduce yourself and to get to know each other a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be with you this afternoon. And I am sorry that I cannot be with you in person, face to face, physically with you, but at least we can hear each other and we can see on the screen each other. So it's a great pleasure. Before I introduce myself, I would like to start this afternoon with a short meditation so that we are sort of preparing ourselves for the afternoon. Now, just to say a few words about the importance of meditation. The word meditation and medicine come from the same root. As the medicine is for the body, the meditation is for the spirit and for the mind and for the soul. As every day we look after our body, we have a breakfast, we feed our body, we bathe our body, we look after our body. Every day, we also need to look after our soul, our psyche, our mind, and our spirit, which means the inner part of ourself, because we are made of two parts, the outer body and the inner body, you can call it. The inner body is the mind, the soul, the spirit, the consciousness. These are non-physical, metaphysical realities. So meditation is to nourish the soul, to feed the mind. And so every morning, as you have breakfast, you have a shower for the body, we have meditation for the mind. And we say that at that time, for say 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever time you can spare, you say to yourself that at this moment, I'm going to go beyond my body, beyond my work, beyond my business, beyond my family affairs, and I will go internally to develop my soul qualities, of spirit qualities, of compassion, of generosity, of kindness, of love, of service, of unity of life. These are the values which I will focus. So this is, in nutshell, the idea behind meditation. It's for the nourishment of the mind and nourishment of the soul and health of the spirit. So let's begin with a short meditation, and then I'll introduce myself and say something about myself. So let's bring our both palms together. And then let's bow to the planet Earth, which is our common home. And then bow to the sacred life, because we are all given this wonderful sacred life. And we bow to the cosmos, the Milky Way, the stars, the moon, the sun, the cosmos. We are all part of this cosmic reality and cosmic existence. So in our humility and a sense of connectedness and relatedness, we bow. And then we put our both hands on our knees and make a circle with your index finger and the thumb on your knees. Make a circle with the index finger and the thumb. This is called mandala. It's a symbol, mudra, a posture, which is a symbol of connectivity and unity and a cycle of life and a cycle of time. As this, we create a cycle in our hand. The life moves in cycle, seasons move in cycle, time moves in cycle, everything returns and everything comes back and goes away and comes back. And so we keep this mudra, this posture on your knees, both hands like this. And then the three fingers stay straight. And so they symbolize the past, the present, and the future simultaneously. So it's a kind of eternal time. We are now not a clock time, but a more in a dream time. It's a kind of eternal time beyond measured time. So past, present, and future represent by three fingers, and they are together. Then we focus our attention on our breath. The spirit, the word spirit, is same as breath. It comes from the same root. So as in inspirare, breathe in, and expirare, breathe out. So bring your whole attention on your breath. Breathing in gently, and breathing out gently. And when you are breathing in and breathing out, remember that we are breathing the same air which all of humanity is breathing. So we are sharing the same air in America, in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, in Australia, wherever people are, they are breathing the same air. So with that sense of unity of life, which we share through our breath, we breathe in and we breathe out mindfully and heartfully, and we enjoy the breath, life-sustaining breath, without which we cannot survive even for a few minutes. And then we also remember that we are breathing the same air, which not only the whole of humanity, but even the life beyond humanity, the animals, plants, mountains, forests, rivers, oceans, all life is maintained and sustained by the same breath which we are breathing. Thus, through our breath, we are all united. We are all connected. We are all related. So with that sense of connectivity and relativity, we breathe in mindfully and we breathe out mindfully. And we enjoy the breath, the shared breath. Common spirituality. And then we think of the whole of cosmos, all the planets on this cosmos, as one, part of one cosmic reality, one cosmic existence, sacred existence. And in order to symbolize that in our words, we remember the mantra, The mantra Om comes from the Upanishads, Indian tradition, Sanskrit, the same root as omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscience, Amen, which means totality, wholeness, completeness. And so, in our meditation, we connect with the whole. And then we offer our prayers. Lead me from death to life, from falsehood to truth. Lead me from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Lead me from hate to love, from war to peace. Let peace fill our hearts, our world, our universe. Peace, peace, peace. May all beings upon this earth live peacefully, find fulfillment and self-realization. And with that prayer, we breathe in mindfully, heartfully, feeling connection with each other in the room, feeling connection in our country with all living beings, feeling connection with our continent, with the Northern Hemisphere, the Southern Hemisphere, the whole planet, and beyond the planet. And I am a microcosm of macrocosm. I am made of the earth, air, fire, water, and consciousness. I am consciousness. I am spirit. I am compassion. I am love. I am truth. I am. And may I offer all my words, all my thoughts, and all my actions for the well-being of all, for the well-being of all, for the well-being of all. And may I live, act, think, speak mindfully and heartfully throughout the day and night, so that meditation becomes part of my life. And I breathe, feeling connection with the whole, with the entire cosmos. And I breathe out. And I enjoy the breath. I am alive. I am grateful for this breath, this prana, this life. And then to end this short meditation, we bring our both palms together again. And we bow again for the sacred life, sacred earth, sacred universe. And its wholeness, completeness, and relatedness. And I hold my palms together as a symbol that all opposites complement and connect, left and right, below and above, masculine and feminine, dark and light, negative and positive. All opposites complement and make whole. With that sense of wholeness, completeness, relatedness, and a sense of the sacred, we conclude this short meditation. Thank you. Please relax. It is my great pleasure to be part of this session, part of this gathering. And I will be giving a keynote just after 2 o'clock. But at this moment, I would like to briefly introduce myself and my life. As Louis has already mentioned, I was born in India, and at age 9, a very young age, I became a Jain monk. There are 4 great religions in India: Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, and Sikhism. So Hindu is the biggest, largest religion. And then Buddhist religion has spread all around the world, particularly in Asia, China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, Nepal, Burma, Thailand, all those countries, Sri Lanka. But Jainism and Sikhism has mostly remained in India. And Jain tradition is very similar to Buddhist religion, but it has a very strong emphasis on non-violence. And so from age 9 to age 18, that was my schooling, you can call it, in a monastic order. And I learned the principle of nonviolence at every level. Nonviolence to yourself, nonviolence to other people, and nonviolence to nature. And so as a monk, I will walk bare feet, no shoes, and only walking. No bicycle, no train, no car, no bus, no boat, no plane, no train, nothing. Always on your two legs, 2 feet, bare feet. So walking came to me very naturally, because from a childhood, I have been touching the earth and feeling the earth with my 2 feet and walking. And then at age 18, I decided to join the Gandhian movement. I was very inspired by Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi's ideals were that nonviolence is not only for the monks. The spirituality is not only for the monks. Nonviolence and spirituality and religiosity should be practiced every day by all people. Even when you are in the world, not a monk, not a monastic person, you should have possibility and preparedness to practice spirituality. And how do you practice spirituality every day? By changing your motivation, by changing your intention. Whatever you do as a service to humanity, as your act of love, as an act of compassion. The moment you do that, then everything becomes spiritual. Spirituality is not in the books. Spirituality is not in the temples or mosques or churches. But spirituality in every action, every word you speak, every action you take, every step you take, you are practicing spirituality. Whether you are in politics, you are in business, you are teaching, you are a doctor, you are a farmer, whatever you are doing, if you do it with the right motivation and right intention, then you are practicing spirituality, farming spirituality, business spirituality, education spirituality, in every sphere. That was Mahatma Gandhi's ideal of nonviolence and spirituality. Spirituality is not something just a ritual. Spirituality is not just a kind of religious dogma or theological theories. Spirituality is love and compassion and a sense of service made visible in every act of life. And so Mahatma Gandhi became my great inspiration, and I worked with the Gandhian movement and Gandhian ashram. I have written a book about my life. If you are interested to read more detail, you can. The book is called No Destination. But to summarize my life, at age 26, I was inspired by the international peace movement. And I was particularly inspired by a man called Bertrand Russell in England. He was a 90 years old philosopher, mathematician, Nobel Prize winning mathematician, but he was a great peace activist. And while he was opposing the nuclear weapons, he protested and he was put in jail. And so, inspired by him, I said to myself that if a man of 90 can go to jail for peace in the world, what am I doing, young man, sitting in India in a coffee house drinking coffee? And so, with that inspiration, with a friend of mine, I decided to walk to 4 nuclear capitals of the world. From New Delhi to Moscow to Paris to London and to Washington, D.C. And my friend and I decided to walk without any money in our pocket, because peace comes from trust. Wars come from fear. So how do you demonstrate and show that you are full of trust in your heart? Because when you have money in your pocket, you go and eat in a restaurant, sleep in a guest house or a hotel. You don't need to depend on anybody. You don't need to trust anybody. You trust your money. But when you have no money, you have to trust people that they will feed you, they will look after you. So it was a very kind of, you can say, strange idea, but this was a very inspiring idea. And so without any money, with my friend, I walked 8,000 miles. And I would like to tell you one story during this walk. I walked through Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran, Azerbaijan, Armenia, and then I and my friend, we came to Georgia, near the Black Sea, just before Sochi. And as I was distributing my leaflet about peace and my walk and our walk, I gave this leaflet to 2 young women who were standing in front of a tea factory. And they read the leaflet. And when they read, they said, "Oh, you have walked from India without any money?" We said, "Yes." "How do you eat?" We said, "People offer us food, hospitality." "Oh, are you hungry? Can we offer you some food? We have a nice canteen in our tea factory. Would you like some tea?" That was a very nice invitation. So I said, "All right, anytime is tea time." We went in and we sat down in the canteen, and the woman brought us tea and bread and nice food. And then suddenly she had a brainwave. She went out of the room and came back with 4 packets of tea. And she said, "These packets of tea are not for you." "For whom are they then?" She said, "They are for our premier in Kremlin. One packet, give to our premier in the Kremlin. The second packet to the president of France in Paris, Palais Elysee. The third packet to London, to 10 Downing Street, the Prime Minister of England. And the fourth packet to the President of the United States of America in the White House in Washington, D.C. I was so touched. I said, "What a wonderful, amazing idea. This ordinary looking woman in this little tea factory, this little town in Georgia, near Sochi. And has such an amazing idea." So we said, "That's a great." And so we carried those 4 packets of peace tea and delivered in the Kremlin, in Paris, in Palais Elysee, although we had some difficulty there, but nevertheless, eventually. And we went to 10 Downing Street and in London, and eventually we were received in the White House. And we gave the packet of peace tea to the representative of the President of the United States. So that was a kind of great story of the journey that we had. And then with a great honor and pleasure of meeting Martin Luther King after we finished our 8,000 mile walk. And then we were invited to Japan. And so we did another pilgrimage from Tokyo to Hiroshima. And then we came back by boat from Japan to England, to India. So this is the kind of journey that I made. And that was a great experience for me. And then I settled in England. After going back to India, I came back to England. And then I, 30 years ago, I established Schumacher College in England. And the Schumacher College is an ecological and spiritual and holistic study. A college, a center for holistic study. And so now I'm teaching at Schumacher College. And also, I have been editing Resurgence and Ecologist magazine. So that has been also a great work for me. So altogether, the influence of Mahatma Gandhi, the influence of peace and spirituality and Jainism and ecological movement, all has come together in my life. So this is, I mean, if you want to go in more detail of all these many, many stories, they are in my book, No Destination, but this is my story. And I'm delighted that I am able to share this with you this afternoon. And then I'll be sharing some of my ideas of ecology and interconnectedness and head, heart, and hands, and all those ideas and our relations with this planet Earth, one Earth. And how we live on this earth in a sustainable way. Those ideas I'll explain after 2 o'clock, after the break. Thank you very much. Louis, this is enough introduction, and now you can carry on. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Satish, for your introduction of your life. I have read, obviously, I've read your autobiography, No Destination. And as you said, there's only so much you can tell in 30 minutes because it was filled with inspirational ways of living. And I think maybe even now, do you have maybe 10 minutes also for the audience? Are there any first questions to Satish about his life or about things he said? That you know resonate with you, or you have questions about maybe for me one thing that resonates is you have I think we live in a time where we have to find we have to bridge a lot of gaps, and I think what we're doing right here as well is we find that different ways of viewing the world are essential to creating a new world together. And one of the bridges we have to gap, I guess, is between East and West, is between two modes of thinking. And you have literally bridged the gap. You have walked from East to the West. Maybe my first question to you is, what are the main differences you've seen in the way we look at life in the East and in the West? And what can we learn from each other?
Yes, that's a very good question. Now in this modern world, in the world of technology and communication, the East and West are coming together. And it traditionally, historically, the East, like India, China, Japan, the Eastern countries, they have explored and developed and evolved more spiritual dimension of life, more interconnected, more holistic, spiritual dimension. In the West, people have, because of the maybe climatic conditions and many other reasons, you have more developed technological, scientific, industrial, economic paradigm. You can say the West has more advanced physical and material well-being and growth economic growth and industrial growth, scientific thinking, logical thinking, rational thinking, much stronger in the West. And in the East, meditation, spirituality, and more caring for the soul and the spirit, and nourishment of the soul, living more simply. But because of this too much emphasis on spirituality, East has suffered. And therefore, we became too easily succumbed to colonialism, imperialism, and many other things. And therefore, lots of poverty and lots of deprivation has taken place. On this other hand, the West, although you have developed industrial, scientific, technological, and imperial, colonial kind of tradition, but the unity of life and the interrelationship of people and our relation with the natural world, they have suffered. So now, since we have come, now the world has become like a global village. And with technology and science and travels and so on, we are close to each other. We need to learn from each other. And I think East needs to have a little bit more understanding of rational and scientific and economic conditions so that people can live well. But not with pollution and waste and the kind of consumerism which is in the West. We should not lose our spirituality while we embrace certain amount of scientific thinking. And on the other hand, the West needs to embrace certain amount of spiritual values, because without those values, we are becoming lonely, isolated, disconnected, discontented. However much we have, how much economic growth we have, we are never contented. We are never satisfied. We are never fulfilled, never enough. So the happiness and the joyfulness and the blissfulness is missing from the modern Western industrial societies. So if we can learn something from the East to how to be contented and how to be fulfilled and how to be joyful with little but good things, but not too much, and without waste and without pollution, then I think West will benefit from the Eastern spirituality. And if we can learn a bit more scientific and a bit more technological and economic paradigm, then I think East will benefit from the West. But we need to strike a balance. We need to strike that balance so that we live in harmony with the natural world and we live in harmony with the Mother Earth. If we can create that kind of civilization, that would be the ideal. And we should strive for the ideal, even if we don't reach within our lifetime, still we could strive for that ideal. Thank you.
Great, thank you. It's almost 2 o'clock UK time, and when we have a small break of 10 minutes, I'll just stand over here so you can actually see me as well. So maybe there's room for one more question from the audience or from the chat. Everyone following on a live stream, you can send in a question. And for everyone, just to be sure, after Satish's keynote, there will be ample time, 45 minutes of more question and answer. But if there's maybe one question before we go into our first break, please raise your hand. No questions so far? No questions? All right, Satish, then I think we'll have just a little bit a longer break. It's beautiful weather, so I guess that's also nice just to have 15 minutes. We'll see you back at 10 past 2.
10 UK past time. 10 past 2.
Yeah. And then okay. I thank you very much for your first hour, and we'll see you back in 15 minutes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Enjoy your little break and enjoy your little sunshine. Okay.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dus als we hier uiterlijk echt om 10 uur weer terug zijn, dan gaan we deze dag voortzetten. Tot zo. this is okay. Great. Okay, great. We've tested, and I only saw a thumbs up. So I guess that's the international sign of let's go. Well, the floor is yours, as I say, Satish.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
You can all hear me. Good. Now this is a great occasion, and I'm delighted to say a few words. Louis sent me a very beautiful quote by Richard Rorty. It says, "A talent for speaking differently rather than for arguing well is the chief instrument of cultural change." So first of all, I would like to say that in our, this is a very good quote for having many ideas, many ways, and not having any dogmatic one idea which everybody must follow. The diversity of truths and diversity of thinking and diversity of views should be respected and celebrated. In my Jain tradition, where I was brought up, as I mentioned before, we have a word for it. It's called anekant. And that means no one view, no dogma. Inclusivity. When you have a one dogma, you say, this is my exclusive truth. So instead of exclusive truth, we want to make inclusive truth. So whatever I'm saying to you this afternoon is one way to see the world, but there are many other ways. And therefore, we are not here to kind of just contradict each other, but we are here to appreciate and celebrate different ways of thinking. Now, this reminds me of the diversity in every sphere, diversity in every level. Biodiversity, which is at the moment diminishing, world is more and more becoming monocultural, single idea monoculture, monocultural agriculture, monocultural industry. So the diversity is disappearing and monoculture is increasing. So we need to protect biodiversity. We need to protect cultural diversity. Our indigenous culture, indigenous wisdom, traditional wisdom in every country, this is disappearing. Now they are becoming somewhere more remote in near the Arctic or in reserves in North America or in Australia, somewhere far away. But the main centers of London, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, Paris, Berlin, Moscow, Beijing, Delhi, Tokyo, New York, all these big centers are losing the traditional indigenous wisdom. So cultural diversity is disappearing, biodiversity is disappearing. And then all the other diversities like religious diversity, national diversity, racial diversity, all these kinds of diversities are becoming into divisions. And people are putting that my nation is better than your nation. My race is better than your race. My religion is better than your religion. So this kind of exclusivity and then contradicting and putting down the other. So blacks and whites, or educated and uneducated, or people living in urban areas and rural areas. Everywhere we see this division. So I would like to say that we, in new paradigm thinking, we need to rise above these divisions and celebrate our diversity. Celebration of diversity is the key to a new humanity, a new paradigm, a new civilization. Particularly after this COVID and coronavirus, we don't want to go back to this divisive world where America great, make America great again, Brexit, each country fighting for their own superiority, and then creating animosity, tension between America and China, tension between Europe and Russia, tension between India and China, tension between Pakistan and India. All these divisions are causing unnecessary waste of resources, waste of talent, and tension, conflict. So I would like a new paradigm to establish the celebration of diversity. And diversity should be seen not in division, but in complementarity. So we say, it's wonderful to have many, many languages, linguistic diversity. It would be boring if 7 billion people were speaking only one language. It's wonderful to have many religions. It would be boring if 7 billion people on this planet Earth was having or worshipping only one religion. It's good to have mosques and temples and synagogues and churches and a tree worshipping and animism and paganism and all kinds of religions. It's wonderful to have this diversity. Like languages, it will be boring if 7 billion people were speaking only one language, whether it's English or French or German or Chinese or Russian or Sanskrit or any language. It's wonderful to have many languages. So diversity should be celebrated. Evolution favors diversity. In the beginning of time, at the time of Big Bang, there was no diversity. There was a gas, and there was eventually water. And then slowly, over billions of years of evolution and hard work of evolution, we have plants and animals and birds and butterflies and mountains and different continents. And then within that those continents, then humans arrive. And within humans from Africa, we all originate in Africa. But then we went around the world. And then indigenous cultures and European cultures and Asian cultures, all these have evolved and evolved and evolved. So we should celebrate this evolution. Evolution favors diversity and not turn everything in monoculture and a kind of see divisions and conflicts when we should have diversity. So that is one fundamental thinking I would like to present this afternoon, that we should celebrate diversity and rise above divisions. And when we celebrate diversity, then we protect diversity. Protection of beauty, protection of indigenous cultures, protection of many forms of life. At the moment, because of monocultural mind, industrial and mass production and mass consumption and mass agriculture, we are encroaching the wildlife and we are encroaching the wild lands, the rainforest. If you go to Brazil, now more and more rainforests are being cut down so that they can grow more soya beans. And those soya beans are now exported from Brazil to England, to Europe, to China, to America, everywhere. But if all those wildlife and rainforests gone, that wildlife will interact with humans and interact with other domestic animals. And that will create a virus. And so the reason we have coronavirus and COVID-19 is because we have encroached the wild landscape and the forest and increased our monocultural agriculture. And so we need to live within our means and not destroy the wildlife. We need to respect the diversity of wildlife, because that's a very important necessity for the flourishing of life. And so maintaining diversity, celebrating diversity, and living within our means. So living within our means requires that we give greater importance to well-being of the planet Earth and well-being of human society, rather than always emphasis on economic growth. Production, consumption, economic growth, profit, All these are means to an end. And the end is well-being of planet Earth, well-being of our biodiversity, cultural diversity, and well-being of human communities. But that has become confused. What should be the end has become the means, and what should be the means has become the end. The production, consumption, economic growth, profit, money, all these should be the means to an end, but they have become the end. Now everything is to make profit. Everything is devoted to economic growth. Everything is devoted to a sacrifice to profit. So human beings have become the instruments of making profit. Human beings have become the instruments of economic growth. Human beings have become the slaves of economy. And also nature has become an instrument of making profit, making economic growth, making money, and increasing industrial production and consumption. So nature and humans have become the means, and end is now economic growth, profit, and production and consumption. So this is the confusion of means and ends. So I would like to suggest that we, after this coronavirus and this COVID-19, we need to create a new way of thinking, and we need to change back what are the means and what are the ends. And we should say that nature is not a means to making profit and economic growth. Nature is not a resource for the economy. Nature is a source of life. That's a big change in our attitude. At the moment, in our attitude, we look at nature as a resource for the economy, and nature's value is only how useful it is for human beings. So everything is sacrificed in the interest of human consumption and production for humans and economic growth. And so we are sacrificing nature. And so we need to change that. And we need to say, nature is not a resource for the economy. Nature is a source of life. And the value of nature is not measured in terms of money or usefulness to humans, but nature has intrinsic value. That's a kind of deep ecology. Deep ecology is nature is protected not for the benefit of humans only, but it is protected because nature has intrinsic value. We all believe in human rights. Of course, I believe in human rights. We all humans have rights to live, to have a good life, food, work, house, medicine, education. That's a human right. And I agree with that. We must uphold human rights, but we must go a step further. And we must say that nature also has rights. Rights of nature must be respected and must be in the constitution and the law. It should be constituted that nature has also rights. Oceans have right to remain clean and unpolluted. Humans have no right to put so much plastic in the oceans. Humans have no right to put so much agriculture in rainforests and cut down the rainforests. Rainforests have right to remain clean and long-term, sustainable, and survive in their own right so that they can have their own life. So you can multiply all these arguments to every sphere of biodiversity. And so rights of nature and human rights go hand in hand together. They are two legs of the same, two legs of the same body. We have to walk on two legs, two aspects of one reality, two sides of one coin. So human rights and rights of nature. So the moment we adhere that, then we can of course say that we need to protect nature, we need to protect our biodiversity, we need to protect our rainforest. And we, at the moment, we are treating nature as if we are here to conquer nature. This is a wrong view, wrong attitude. We are not here to conquer nature. We are here to live in harmony with nature. But this idea to conquer nature and waging war with nature has become the industrial paradigm of last 100 years. or even longer than 100 years, then we have been encroaching and encroaching and encroaching more and more natural life. And we have to create a new economy. New economy, which is not linear economy, that you take from nature, which is finite. Nature is finite. And make goods which are very unsustainable, but also not very durable. Built-in obsolescence in our products. So you produce more and more and more clothes, but one season, you throw them away. You put them on the landfill, or you give them away because they are no longer fashionable, or they are no longer lasting. So we take more and more resources with increasing speed from a finite earth and finite resources, and make undurable, short-term lasting products, throw-away products, used for short time, single-use plastic, single-use many other things, packaging, and then throw them away. And this is a kind of take, use, throw away. This is a kind of linear economy. We need a cyclical economy. A cyclical economy where, like in nature, there's no waste, there's no pollution. Everything comes from nature and goes back to nature. At the moment, I have 15 apple trees in my orchard. I live in a small village in North Devon in England. And at this moment, the 15 apple trees are absolutely full of apples. You cannot count them. There are thousands and thousands of apples on those 15 apple trees. This is the orchard. And that's an example of the abundance of nature. I planted one seed for each tree, a small seed, quarter of an inch seed, the brown pip, which you throw away because you can't eat it. That one seed has become a tree. And that one tree is giving thousands of apples day after, year after year, for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Actually, these trees have been there for 40 years. I've been here in this village for 40 years. So abundance of nature, but in that abundance, there's no waste. Whatever fruit you want to take, you take. And whatever you don't take, it goes back to the soil. And it fertilizes the soil. It nourishes the soil. It feeds itself. The apples become the food for the earthworms. Apple become the food for the birds. Apple become food for the bees. Apple become food for the soil. And the soil is nourished. And then next year, when the season comes again, apple season, they'll be full of apples again. This is the beauty of natural economy, economy of nature. We have to learn from nature. Nature is our teacher. We have to remember, nature is our mentor. And for me, nature is my religion. Nature is my God. When I am exhausted, tired, I don't go to temple to pray. I don't go to mosque or church for worship. I go and sit under a tree. The Buddha, when he got enlightened, he was sitting under a tree. And so nature is our teacher. And we learn from nature generosity. These apple trees are so generous. You go to apple tree, it will never ask you, have you come with your Visa card or your wallet? How much money have you got? No question. You can have apples as a gift. Gift of nature. As many gift apples you can eat. And nature has no discrimination. Nature gives without any discrimination to anybody who is hungry. You can be a saint or a sinner. You can be a prisoner. And yet, apple tree will make no discrimination. Unconditional love, unconditional compassion, unconditional gift, nature gives, apple tree gives. Whether you are humans or birds or animals, you can have apples. You are educated, uneducated, a peasant, a powerful prime minister or president of a country, or an ordinary a sweeper of the street, whoever you are, for apple, you are the same person and you are a living being. There is no discrimination. That is the beauty, abundance, and generosity and compassion of nature. And what we are doing, we are using nature as inanimate. Nature has no life. Nature is a machine. Nature is a kind of dead rock. Earth is a dead rock. This is our modern industrial, scientific, rational, materialistic, consumeristic view. So this is when Louis asked about the East and West. And I said, this is what we need to learn from the East. This is what we need to learn from our traditional wisdom, that nature is not a machine. Nature is a living organism. Earth, Mother Gaia, is not a dead rock. It is a living organism. Nature has consciousness. Nature has life. Nature has a memory. Rupert Sheldrake, a great scientist of a new paradigm, he says that nature has a memory, morphic resonance. It's a wonderful new science of Gaia, of morphic resonance. This is a new science which is embracing this holistic and this very inclusive and a living science and living earth and living nature. All this come together, this life. And so we need to understand nature and no separation. Human beings have said nature out there and we humans separate. We are not, as if we are not nature. This is a wrong attitude, wrong view in my understanding. Humans are as much nature as trees and animals and mountains and forests and lakes and oceans. The mountains and the trees and the forests and the animals are made of earth, air, fire, water, and consciousness. And humans are made of earth, air, fire, water, and consciousness. So the different life form. Animals are a different life form. Forests are a different life form. One life form has one sense. Other life form has two senses. Other life form has three senses. The other life form has four senses. And we have five senses. So there are different senses. But life, basic life is the same. Physical, different. But life is the same. Living organism is the same. And so humans and nature are not separate. Humans and nature are one. We are one. This unity of life, this interconnectedness, this interdependence, this interrelationship, this is need to be recognized in this post-COVID and post-coronavirus time, so that we can create a more harmonious relationship with our planet Earth, more harmonious relationship, all biodiversity, all cultural diversity. We celebrate all this diversity and not create again into divisions and conflicts and wars and conquering nature and conquering other cultures and imposing any monoculture, whether it's industrial culture or capitalist culture, or materialistic culture, or economic growth paradigm, all this imposing on all societies around the world, which the Western countries have been doing, first through colonialism, then through imperialism, then through industrialism, then through World Bank, then to IMF, then to this idea of industrial growth, and this education. We are educating all our young people to think in industrial, materialistic, consumeristic, economic way, and not have holistic worldview. This is why I established Schumacher College to teach in England. We have this college and you are welcome to come and visit Schumacher College and see what we are doing to create this holistic education where we learn from nature and we feel one with nature and we receive whatever from nature, we receive with humility. This humanity cannot be good without humility. Humility and humanity must go together. The word human comes from humus. And you know what humus means in Latin? Humus means soil. So we humans are soil in our words, in our language. If we go back to our language, humans are soil. We are made of soil. And therefore, humus and human, and Adam, also the same idea. Adam word comes from the soil, from the earth. And so humanity and humility, they go together. So it's arrogance that humans are somehow superior and a special. And all life, all nature can be polluted, can be wasted, can be used for human growth and economic growth and human grandiose and human consumption and production. This has to change. And we have to, rather than being consumers, We have to become makers. At the moment, this is why I said Schumacher College is education of head, education of heart, education of hands. At the moment, our modern education is about head. When a student goes to school or university, teachers look at the young person. They don't see that this young person has a body. They only see that this young person has a brain. No body, no hands, no heart, no legs, only brain, only head. And even only the left hemisphere of the brain. Not even the two brains that we have, left hemisphere and right hemisphere. And so we are educating our young people only their head and preparing them to be the cog in the machine of this industrial juggernaut, the industrial paradigm, the industrial economic system. This, if you want a new civilization, a new paradigm, a new culture where humans and nature can live in harmony with each other, then we have to create a new kind of education. Education of hearts, education of hands. Head, heart, and hands together. And legs. We have to walk nature. We have to learn to walk back. So this way, we are creating a new education. And that education is a such that we do not become just consumers, but we become makers. You know the word poet, an artist, comes from making. Artisan is a maker. Poet, poesis, is a maker. So if you are not a maker, you cannot be a poet. A poet is a maker of new poetry. If a consumer of poetry cannot be a poet. Poet has to have his or her imagination and the creativity and use his hands to write. And think and feel in your heart. And when you combine your head, heart, and hands, then you can produce poetry. So in the same way, everyone can be a poet if we use our head, heart, and hands. Everyone can be a maker. And when you make something, you grow food, you do gardening, you cook food, you make clothes, you build houses, then you can live in that house. Then you can eat that food. You can wear those clothes. So consumption comes after making. But at the moment, we think that making is too arduous, and therefore let somebody poor in poor country like Vietnam or Bangladesh or China or India or Africa, they make it cheap labor and we just consume. So our Western, European, and American societies have become mere consumers, dependent on the good labor. But cheap labor, the slave labor, we think the slavery had been abolished, but there's a lot of slave labor even now in the world. And those slaves are still working on a very, very small income for us to produce clothes and shoes and furniture and umpteen other things and food. And so we have become so consumer. So we need to become makers again. We need to learn to produce our food, make our clothes, build our houses, not depend on the cheap food and cheap clothes and cheap shoes and cheap furniture and cheap production from a cheap labor in Africa or Asia or South America or somewhere else. This is a kind of exploitative system that we have built. Although we think that, is it good for the economy of the poor countries that we buy goods for them? But we are exploiting them. We are using cheap labor. I think the people in Asia and Africa and South America, poor countries, they should produce food and clothes and shoes and furniture and all other things for their own local communities. I believe in local communities and local economy. When you develop and sustain local economy, then you can have your mind global. Think globally, but act locally. Our mind should be global. But at the moment in our modern world, our minds have become narrow. America, make America great again, or Brexit, or many other narrow-minded, my nation better than your nation, my religion better than your religion, my language better than your language. We have become, in our minds, narrow and parochial and limited and mean, where the economy had become globalized. The ecological paradigm and a sustainable society and a spiritual society should be the other way around. Our mind should be global. Think globally. And we should be all embracing. Our heart should be global. And love for all humanity, one earth, one future. But our economy, our feet should be on the ground, and our food should come from local countries. So even in Holland, you can grow lots of food in your own place. Holland was a famous country for good food, good dairy food, and good cheese, and good many things. But now Holland is becoming less and less self-reliant and self-sufficient. And so in all countries, but of course, Holland is very near to Belgium and very near to Germany and very near to France. So you can have a local economy where you can have within Europe, you can have some export import, but dependent on China and Africa and Vietnam and Bangladesh and getting your foods and clothes and everything from far, far away. And then that requires a lot of transportation, and transportation requires a lot of fossil fuel. And fossil fuel creates global warming and climate change. And therefore, everything had effect on nature and environment. And so we need something, a new way of thinking, a new way of being, so that we can really create a new paradigm. Let me see what the time is. So my time is over now. I have spoken long enough, but you get the idea. Celebrate diversity and make nature and humans as the end goal and their well-being as our aim, and economy, production, consumption as the means to an end within frugality, without waste, without pollution. If we create a new way of thinking with wonderful diversity, then humanity can live happily on this planet Earth without destroying the planet Earth, and make a great journey of life. And so this is the transformation that we need, especially after coronavirus. So these are a few words of my keynote this afternoon. And if you have any questions and comments, I would be delighted to respond to your questions. Thank you very much.